I learned about a new book that came out, The Happiest Man on Earth. You ever heard about it?
No.
Written by Eddie Jucco. Jucco. He's a Holocaust survivor, and he's 101 years old. He lives in Sydney, Australia, with his wife. And it's a new book. It came out, I think, last year, and now it's translated to many languages, and it's a bestseller. Small book. An amazing book. I believe it will turn to like a book of like Night from Elie Wiesel.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about? This will be a book just like this. And even better. Why? It's much more optimistic book.
Yeah, Night was not optimistic.
Exactly, to say the least. This book, why it's optimistic? First of all, he wrote it 75 years after the Holocaust. He just wrote it. He didn't write it then after the war. Number two is he's an optimistic person. He's just a very optimistic person. And but more than that, Elie Wiesel basically was suffered from the Holocaust from the Nazis for 1 year. Mm-hmm. From April of 1944, then we picked him up from Siget to Auschwitz till 1945. I mean, that's plenty of stories in 1 year. In the Holocaust.
It's not a competition.
Exactly. This man is from Leipzig, Germany. Mm-hmm. He suffered from the beginning of the war, but not only from the beginning of the war. He suffered from the day, exactly, when Hitler came to power. Exactly, you nailed it. When Hitler came to power, even he was born in Leipzig. Leipzig is a big city, you know. It was a lot of shows there. Business events, and it was a very famous city. Mm-hmm. Until the age of 13, life was amazing. He was a good German, and he was very proud of being a German. Mm-hmm. He says his family, they were First World War, they were Germans. Mm-hmm. Second World, they were Germans. And they somewhere in the end, they were Jewish too. Mm-hmm. Not that they were not traditional, they used to go to shul every Shabbat. His mother kept a kosher kitchen. They kept kosher because his grandmother was religious. They made kiddush every Shabbat. They had a dinner. They were traditional Jews. His mother used to bake challahs before Shabbat. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But he was very proud of living in the country as the most enlightened, the most educated, the most advanced. He was very proud to be a German.
Mm-hmm.
He felt like the luckiest man on earth that he lives in Germany. Until 1933, he came to school one day. It was right before his bar mitzvah. They told him, you cannot learn here anymore. You're a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
He had the shock of his life. He was so shocked, it was unbelievable. He was supposed to be an engineer. They used to do special tests for kids to know what they're good in. He wanted to be a doctor, but the test showed that he'd do well as an engineer. That he went to an engineering school, a high school that will teach him. Then his father, basically, his whole world collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't understand what happened to the Germans, to his best friend. They are such educated, nice, moral people. They clean the streets. They never do anything wrong. What happened?
Mm-hmm.
And forever he had this question. Until today, he still has this question. What happened to him during the Holocaust? You'll read it by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to concentrate on what happened to him after the Holocaust. The last day of the war, he crawled from a ditch to the main street, crawled to the main road. He couldn't walk. He was so sick.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw a tank coming. It was an American tank. They stopped. The American soldiers, he described them, the beautiful, handsome American soldiers, picked them up, wrapped them up. The next time he woke himself up a week later in a hospital. White dishes, with white sheets and, you know, linens. He couldn't believe it. He thought it's a dream.
Mm-hmm.
Very sick. Every time the doctor came to check on him, he asked, doctor, how am I doing? He didn't want to tell him. He walked away. One day the nurse came to listen if he's breathing. He grabbed her hand. He says, Emma, I'm not letting you go. Tell me what's my situation. He told them, you have 35% chances to survive. He cried and he said, he made a promise to God, if I survive, I will never come back to Germany, ever. And whatever the Germans ruined, I will try to make back the world a better place, a good place, and help others. 6 weeks later, he recovered. He was released from the hospital, full of wounds, but recovered, enough to get out. They gave him refugee papers. He's on the way to Belgium. He comes to the Belgian border, border. They tell him, you're a German. You cannot go in. He says, I'm a German, a Jew run away from the Germans to Belgium, and the Belgian authorities gave me over back to the Germans to be killed. And now I survived. They hear that they both, okay. And they gave him food and this, and they let him go in. He came to Brussels. And in Brussels, he went to a place, you know, people hanging out to see what, to meet family, to see. He met his best friend that they survived together in Auschwitz. And they were such friends that they lived for each other. That's how he survived, he said, because of this friend. But he lost them on the death march because his friend said he could not walk anymore. Then he helped him to find a place where he hid him somewhere, and he thought he's dead. Bottom line, he found his friend alive. Now they're two together. They went to a refugee center. They said a long line of people standing waiting for food. He looked at his friend and said, this is not a business for us. We have to go to find a job.
Yeah.
There were two young people. He was a mechanical engineer. His friend was a carpenter. They found jobs right away. A week later, they had enough money to put a down payment to rent an apartment in the center of Brussels. They started to live a life. They're normal, they had a job, they go. A few months later, he put a picture of himself in the Jewish newspaper. There was a section looking for family. His sister discovered him. He thought he lost his sister. She was going through everything like him, but in the end, he thought he lost her. He says, now I have my best friend, I have my sister, I recovered. Before that, when he discovered that he has nobody alive, he thought he doesn't want to be alive. He lost 100 family members. Extended family. He lost everybody. Before he found his friend and his sister, but then he made the decision, I'm going to live. I'm going to live. And finished. Now is his sister and his friend, the same apartment, they're living, it's so nice. A few months later, he reads in the newspaper, then two Jewish girls jumped off a bridge to the water. They wanted to commit suicide. And they were unfortunately unlucky. They were not successful. The authorities picked them up. The police picked them up and put them in a mental home. He looks at his friend. He says, two Jewish girls. I know why they committed suicide. Then we cannot give them to be in a mental home. He made a promise. He's going to make it better. He says, friend, we are going to the mental home. He went there. He meets a third girl, a Jewish girl who tried to commit suicide. He says the conditions were deplorable. Terrible conditions. It gets to the head of the home and he tells them, he met with them, he says, listen, these girls are not crazy. I know them. They came, he heard the story, they came to Brussels back from Auschwitz to find out that the whole family were killed. There had nobody in the world who wanted to die. He says, give them to me. All three girls, we'll take them, we'll give them an apartment, we'll help them. He took them to his apartment. He looks in the girls, he says, they were not messing around here. I have a sister here, you live with my sisters. They treat you like our sisters.
Yeah.
And they took him every twice a week. He says the skin was in terrible condition. They took him because he used to walk in the freezing weather.
Right.
You know that in Auschwitz, he used to sleep naked. They could not run away.
Nice.
In the cold, freezing days outside. Then they used to, and he says they took him to special mineral beds, you know, where you can, what it's called.
Oh, sure.
It's what it's made, I don't know what.
Exfoliate?
It's something like this.
Basically, you drop off your dead skin cells.
Little by little, he says that it took him, he says every time he took them back, again, he himself used to go to these places. He says, you can see they had normal, they became normal. He says, they were good girls, normal people, but they went to hell. They found boys, they got married. He found a girl, he got married. His friends found him. But he says he was still sad. He says an interesting story. He was once walking on the streets in Brussels. And his friend, see a guy walking with a coat. He says, this is my coat. His friend tells him, are you crazy? He says, this is my coat, I'm telling you. He walks after this guy. He comes to, he goes into a restaurant, this guy. He goes after him and says, please, it's my coat, you're wearing my coat. His parents lived in Brussels, in Belgium, in the middle of the war. Yeah. And then they were taken to the Nazis. Somebody took everything out of them, stole everything. He tells him, no, it's not my, it's not yours. He says, it's my coat. He walked out of the restaurant, calls the policeman. The guy tells him, take off your coat, you have to see it. Takes off. The name of the tailor from Leipzig is engraved in his name. This guy says, couldn't even read the letters.
Yep.
Says, it was my coat. He says, they made it for a special coat in Leipzig.
Yep.
And this is a coat. The guy took it. He says, this is just an example of what was going on.
Sure.
He says, the anti-Semitism after the war was so bad. He got married. He says, he was still not a happy person. The first time he found happiness when he had a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Says when he was holding the baby in his hand, he looked on the little baby and says, a miracle took place. The joy of life, the desire to be alive again came back to him.
Mm-hmm.
And right there he made a decision that he's going to change his mind, his attitude. He'll be alive. He will not be afraid of people, not be angry, not hate anybody, and he will live his life. And he said to him, the best therapy was getting married and having children. He moved to Sydney, Australia. For the first week, he said, he thought it's, he said he wanted to run away from Europe. I don't blame him. He came, he said, he read about it, that there is sun, every day sun, sunny days. It was raining for 6 or 8 weeks. He was so depressed. But told his wife Europe. He made a mistake. Huh?
It wasn't Europe.
Exactly. But he said then it was, last 20 years, he didn't speak about the Holocaust for many years. Last 20 years, he started to speak about it. There is a TED Talk
that he gave. What's his name again?
Eddie Jucco.
Huh?
The Happiest Man on Earth. That's the name of the book. And I think that's the name of the talk on TED. Amazing. This attitude is the attitude of Judaism in general. We're now mourning the 3 weeks, mourning the destruction of the temples. Before the first temple was another temple. The Jewish people, when they entered the land of Israel, they built a temple in Shiloh. It's in the occupied territories. I was there. And there is the ruins of Shiloh still there. This temple was standing for 369 years. And then the Jews once took the Ark of the Covenant for a war with the Philistines. Mm-hmm. And the Philistines they lost the war, they lost the Ark. Nobody went. The temple was not destroyed, but no, everybody lost interest in the temple. It fell apart. The Ark was not there. Right then, the new leader was Samuel the prophet. Samuel didn't try to rebuild a silo. He didn't try to rebuild a temple. Samuel went around all over the communities to rebuild the life of the Jewish people. The Jews were depressed. They lost the war. To encourage them. He didn't look back. He went forward. By the destruction of the first temple, 10 years before the destruction of the first temple, the Babylonians exiled the whole elite of Jerusalem, of Israel. The king and of his whole entourage and the leaders of the army, 10,000 people, some historians say 40,000 people were exiled to Jerusalem, to Babylon. They were sitting there under suitcases. We are going back. Hashem will take us back. Jeremiah sends him a letter. Jeremiah was the prophet living in Jerusalem. He sends him a letter to Babylon with two diplomats. Guys, get married, build houses, plant vineyards, and marry off your children, have children there, and pray for the good of the city that you're living here. When there will be peace for them, will be peace for you. Mm-hmm. And when God will want to bring you back in 70 years from now, then you come back. Kind of, don't sit in your suitcases.
Right.
Move on. Move forward. The same thing is the second temple. By the end of the second temple, before the destruction, the extremists fighting with the Romans, mm-hmm. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the leader of the Jewish people, escaped in a coffin outside of the city,
yep.
Went to Vespasius and told him, he want to destroy Jerusalem, go ahead. Give me Yavne. Let the rabbis, let anybody want to escape, go to a different city and learn Torah. We don't need a temple. We're not fighting about you, against you. We just want to move on with life.
Revolutionary. It's a surrender, but it's revolutionary.
Yeah, very, very revolutionary. But again, the same attitude, moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
That's like this Jew. And in the 3 weeks, the Rebbe said we should learn the laws. You know, we not to be busy with mourning to the stories of the destruction, but to be busy with this, with the how to build the temple. We're learning the laws of the temple. We're talking about the future temple. We're living it. We're looking forward, not backwards. That's what Judaism is all about. We are building. We are moving on. We're continuing. That's the secret of Jewish survival.